Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
Like children in a home and teenagers. And I mean, if something isn't clear and understandable, they're not going to follow it.
Jerry, we have to break in across. We're getting breaking news from the Belfast rape trial. Breaking news from our courts correspondent, Frank Graney. Paddy Jackson has been found not guilty of sex assault, not guilty of rape. From the latest from Frank Graney, Stuart Olding has been found not guilty of oral rape. Blaine McElroy, not guilty of exposure. Rory Harrison, not guilty of perverting the course of justice and withholding information. All four defendants have been acquitted. We'll be back with more on this breaking news after the break. You're very welcome back to Lunchtime Live. Richard Chambers sitting in for Ciara Kelly this afternoon. The breaking news this afternoon, all four defendants in the Belfast rape trial have been acquitted. Our courts correspondent, Frank Graney, has been covering the trial throughout. He joins us live on the line from Belfast. Frank, what can you tell us?
Yes, Richard. Well, it's hard to believe that after so many weeks of evidence, this is a week nine, that it took the jurors just 3 hours and 45 minutes to arrive at their unanimous verdicts in relation to all six counts that the four men accused. Remember, Paddy Jackson was facing one count of vaginally raping this woman at a party at his house in South Belfast in June 2016. He also pleaded not guilty to sexually assaulting the same woman. His friend and Ireland and Ulster rugby teammate Stuart Olding denied one count of oral rape against the same complainant. Their friend Blaine McElroy was facing one count of exposure. He denied that. Rory Harrison was facing two charges, perverting the course of justice and withholding information. And after just 3 hours and 45 minutes, the 11 men and women of the jury returned to Course 12 on the fourth floor of Laganside Courts to instruct the court that they had acquitted all four of the defendants of all the charges they faced.
A warning just for our listeners that there is a very some graphic detail in this. So please be wary if you do have younger listeners tuned into this. Frank, were you surprised in a way with the speed of deliberation, as you say, 3 hours and 45 minutes after the length of this trial to arrive at these verdicts?
Yes, in my experience, certainly for a trial that goes on for that long, 5 weeks of prosecution evidence, the defence spent a week calling evidence as well. So when you take that into account, and given the fact that there were so many accounts and so many people in the dock for accused, I did expect that it would take a little bit longer. But interestingly, the jury came back with a few questions for the judge yesterday evening that we weren't allowed to speak about until now. And those questions were quite telling. They specifically related to the charge against Rory Harrison. And the feeling was amongst myself and my colleagues that if they were now dealing with Rory Harrison, then they had already made their minds up in relation to the three other accused. We'll never know for sure, obviously, but given the speed of their deliberations, one would suspect that this time yesterday evening they had made up their minds in relation to the three accused. 3 hours and 45 minutes isn't a great length of time for deliberations of this length, but again, it's for the men and women of the jury to decide when they've arrived at their decisions, which were unanimous. All 11 of the jurors agreed on each one of the verdicts.
All unanimous, as Frank Graney says there. What was the mood like in court, Frank? What was the reaction of people inside in that courtroom when these verdicts were read out?
Well, as you can imagine, I mean, we have covered this throughout the 9 weeks of this trial. It's been a very high profile case, given the profiles of Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding and the nature of the allegations against them. It came as no surprise that this was followed hugely up here in the north and indeed on the south side of the border. The public gallery was full most days. I counted 100 seats in the public gallery. There were bums on every single one of those seats for most days of this trial. And indeed today they were turning people away from the public gallery when news filtered through the building that the verdict was in. The four accused were down in the canteen, sitting with their family and friends, having a bite to eat, having cups of tea. I had actually left the building to file a news report back to base for 1 o'clock when I got word that a verdict was in. And I was actually right behind Paddy Jackson as he went into the courtroom. There was an embrace with his mother just before he opened the doors to course 12, a little pat on the back, a little pat of reassurance maybe from his mother as he entered the courtroom to learn his fate. the judge did give a stark warning to the public gallery not to make any sort of reaction when the verdicts came in. She warned them that if they did, they would be escorted out of the courtroom. And indeed, there wasn't much of a reaction until the four men were told their fate. Families and friends embraced. The four men were asked to stand throughout. They eventually left the dock and were embraced by their families outside the courtroom. Then I noticed Rory Harrison being swamped by his family, who have been there throughout. Paddy Jackson walked out of a consultation room. I saw him shaking hands with his barrister, Brendan Kelly, who had defended his case successfully. Remember, it was up to the prosecution to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. The defence were under no obligation to call witnesses. The defendants were under no obligation to take the stand. Each and every one of them did in turn, and they have now been acquitted and will soon walk free from the court as free men. As you can imagine, over the past few days, the media attention on this particular case has heightened. There's been a huge media presence throughout. But as I speak to you now, Richard, there are many camera crews, TV trucks, reporters, journalists, all waiting now to see if we'll get some reaction from the four defendants when they eventually leave Laggan-side courts.
The interest, as you say, Frank, in this case throughout has been fairly unprecedented. I mean, a lot of questions were asked by people who perhaps don't know about reporting restrictions on this, but there was a huge level of interest in it throughout this, not just today in terms of the public gallery, but this was very unusual in that regard, wasn't it?
Yes, well, particularly the difference is the main difference between a rape trial in the north and down south is if this case was heard in Dublin and these allegations had been made south of the border, the accused men would not have been identified. There would have been interest in the case, particularly if, you know, reporters were in a position to identify them. And that would only have been the case post-conviction. And then only if by naming them, you wouldn't be identifying the complainant. Her identity has been protected throughout for obvious reasons. But given the fact that the press could identify the four defendants, in particular the first two, who would be household names, particularly around Belfast, Ulster Rugby is a huge institution in this city. You see players emblazoned on billboards and buses driving through the heart of the city centre. It's a big rugby town. Everybody knows Paddy Jackson. Everybody knows Stuart Holding. When these allegations were made, we heard the two men had just returned from a tour of South Africa with the Ireland rugby team, where for the first time in his international career, Paddy Jackson had been their first choice number 10. Stuart Holding had made two caps. He returned to Belfast the happiest man in the world, he told the court. These guys are very well known. Given the nature of the complaint that was then made against him, it came as no surprise that there was such media interest in the case.
Mm. As you say again, Frank, just to reiterate for our listeners who are just tuning in, all four defendants cleared in this, 11 jurors unanimously finding the defendants innocent. They saw all of the innocent or the evidence before them. Have we heard any reaction from elsewhere at this point, Frank, in terms of from Ulster Rugby? As you say, Belfast very much, you know, the Ulster Rugby connection there is just massive. Have we heard any reaction from elsewhere at this point?
No, this is a breaking news. I literally walked out of the courtroom to bring this news to you and your listeners. So I'm not sure if any reaction has been forthcoming from Ulster Rugby. I do understand that the Public Prosecution Service are expected to make a statement at some point this afternoon. And there may be statements on the steps of the courthouse from the defendants or possibly their representatives. And if there are, we will certainly bring their words to you. I don't know if there has been any reaction from Ulster Rugby, but what I do know is that they have been keeping a very close eye on proceedings because from day one, they have had a solicitor in the courtroom on a watching brief. This particular solicitor has been keeping an eye on what has been happening, and you would assume that she has been reporting that back to Ulster Rugby. But as far as some sort of a response from either Ulster Rugby or the IRFU, who remember suspended both Paddy Jackson and Stuart Holding when these allegations were made and after they had been charged, they haven't put on the green shirt since. They haven't played for Ulster since. So it'll be interesting to see now how their careers progress now that they have been acquitted.
In terms of how this trial progressed, Frank, one of the things that stuck out over the past couple of days for people who are following it in was the weight that the judge gave to inconsistencies in terms of testimony and what was given there. Could you just remind our listeners what was said there? Because it may well have had an impact in this.
Well, my experience covering these cases whereby it is one person's word against another is that clearly there are conflicts and inconsistencies in accounts, differences in accounts. It's obviously one person's word against another. And that was one of the reasons the complainant didn't go to police immediately. We heard that she had reservations that she wouldn't be believed and that the boys would concoct a story. This was the claim that the prosecution made, was that they did indeed concoct a story to bat away the complaint in the event that that one was made. Now, the prosecution obviously didn't prove that claim beyond the standard, beyond the high standards, that standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. The jurors obviously felt that they hadn't. And in relation to inconsistencies in the initial accounts that the woman gave to her friends, to doctors who examined her, and the one that she gave later to police and indeed to the men and women of the jury, there were many inconsistencies. For example, she told her friend that she had been raped by three Ulster rugby scum. That was in a text message that she sent to one of her friends. Mm. Obviously, I'm not referring to either Paddy Jackson or Stuart Olding as scum, but certainly there were only two Ulster rugby players in the dock. And she had only the charges that were brought in the end were one of vaginal rape against Paddy Jackson and another of oral rape against Stuart Olding. We heard there was no mention of oral sex in her conversations with her friends initially, when she was forensically examined by Dr. Philip Lavery in the Roan Sexual Assault Referral Clinic, which is just north of Belfast City. There was no mention of a woman coming in, for example. Dara Florence was a witness that gave evidence in the early stages of the trials. She said that she walked in on what she thought was a threesome and that she saw Paddy Jackson having sex with the woman while her head was down towards the middle area of Stuart Olding. But she thought that she hadn't seen the woman in any sort of distress, and she hadn't felt that she had witnessed a rape. Now, in relation to inconsistencies, the judge did go into them in great length. And to sum it up, what she said about inconsistencies, and this was something that they had to consider when they were looking at, and remember, there were differing accounts between the four accused as well. The four accused all gave evidence in relation to various things, like the fact that there was a claim from Rory Harrison and Paddy Jackson that the woman, the complainant, was staring at him and was fixated with Paddy at the party. Blaine McElroy then got up and said that she was trying it on with everybody and that at one point she even tried to kiss him while they were dancing. So that's just an example of a difference in accounts between the four accused. And in relation to inconsistencies, Judge Patricia Smith said that just because somebody tells somebody one thing and tells another a different thing, it doesn't necessarily mean there are a lie, that they're lying. And in relation to the boys, she said there was a lot of drink involved, a considerable amount of alcohol. We heard that Stuart Olding, for example, had 23 drinks before this alleged offence took place, and he had just returned from a long haul flight from South Africa, where, like I mentioned, he was representing his country in a tour of South Africa. And in relation to the differences in their accounts, as she said, when alcohol is involved, perceptions may be different of an event. So if you and I were to go out for a few pints tonight, Richard, we may be recalling events differently to our friends tomorrow about what happened. And she said that was up for the jurors to decide. And obviously, it would seem that the case that was put forward by the prosecution in relation to this circling of the wagons and a plan being hatched to protect the boys and their reputations, well, clearly the jury didn't believe it.
Frank, obviously a lot of concern coming in from texters and tweeters about the woman at the centre of this. Obviously, her identity has been protected, as is the norm in these cases. Do we know anything about what happens there?
Her identity is protected and will that protection will remain throughout, even after these four men have been acquitted. The jury has considered, or the judge, the court, has treated this woman as a vulnerable witness. You may remember that when she gave evidence at the end of January, a large blue curtain was pulled across the witness box so that just the judge, the jury, and the legal teams were in her direct line of vision. She wasn't able to actually see the four men in the dock who sat side by side in the middle of the large courtroom. There was a camera mounted in front of the witness box, and that fed pictures of her giving evidence onto a large screen that was placed just to the right of the dock so that they could see, and indeed we could see, expressions as she was giving evidence. She was cross-examined for 7 days. She was composed throughout. She became visibly upset at times when she was recounting the specific allegation about what she had claimed happened in Paddy Jackson's bedroom. And when she stepped down from the witness box, the jurors wouldn't have been aware, but she was also invited to watch proceedings and to listen to proceedings from afar. There was a witness room in the belly of the courtroom where an audio feed was playing what was happening in Court 12 for her. That link was opened again this morning before the jury came in. We haven't seen the complainant since she stepped down from the witness box. I don't know if she was in that witness room listening to proceedings every day. You would assume and imagine that she probably was. But the link was established again this morning. Mm. So there was somebody in that witness box. And I'd say it was possibly the complainant. And she will be well aware at this stage now that the four men that she accused of these crimes, or the three men rather, she had no complaint to make against Rory Harrison. That was a prosecution brought by the PPS. But she will be aware now at this point, obviously, that they have been acquitted.
Okay, Frank, and before you go, just in terms of the jury in this, what were they told at the end of this? Have they been, let off from jury duty forever after the point of this?
They were actually asked to take a short break. It's been a bit of a theme throughout these short breaks, but rightly so, because of, I suppose, the nature of the evidence, and particularly during the closing speeches and the judge's charge, where they're dealing with specific pieces of legislation and various elements that need to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt before they can return guilty verdicts. So there were breaks taken throughout. Indeed, when the complainant was giving evidence, there were lots of breaks throughout, and the jury were invited to take another break today after they came back with the verdicts. And I actually wasn't in the courtroom when they returned, but one would assume that in these cases they are excused for a lengthy period of time. Indeed, some juries are excused for life, unless, of course, they want and wish to sit on a jury in the future. And then that is obviously taken into account. But the judge did thank them for, obviously, their attention throughout what has been a long and grueling process. And those are the words of the prosecuting barrister, Toby Hedworth. That's how he described how these proceedings have been when he addressed the jurors for a final time. Whatever about grueling, it has certainly been long. This trial was set down for 5 weeks initially. We're approaching the end of week 9 now. So everybody you speak to has an opinion, it would seem, in relation to this case. People became so entrenched in their views before a first word was spoken from the witness box. And you just get the sense now that that's going to continue. People have an opinion one way or the other, but the jurors have decided that these men are not guilty of the charges they face, and that decision has to be respected.
Of course, and it is, as you say, something that I'm sure we will be talking about in the media, and people will be commenting on it on social media in the coming days. Frank, thank you so much indeed for your coverage. Our courts correspondent, Frank Craney, thank you so much on behalf of all of us here at News Talk and our listeners for your stellar work in covering this trial over what was a very difficult 9 weeks in this case. As I reiterate again, just for our listeners, all four defendants in the Belfast rape trial have been found not guilty on all charges. Ulster and Ireland rugby player Paddy Jackson acquitted of rape and sexual assault. Stuart Olding acquitted of rape. Blaine McElroy found not guilty of exposure. And Rory Harrison found not guilty of perverting the course of justice and not guilty of withholding information. The jury reaching their unanimous verdicts on all counts after 3 hours and 40 minutes of deliberations. Conor Hanley is law lecturer at NUI Galway, just in reaction to the Belfast rape trial and the legal issues surrounding it. Conor, thank you very much for taking our call this afternoon. Could you just spell out for our listeners, just in terms of how this played out? Because it isn't the same jurisdiction here in the Republic as it is in the North. So could you just explain some of the principles that we've seen play out over the last number of weeks?
Well, The Northern Ireland jurisdiction is similar in many respects to our own. The basic definition and elements of the offence of rape are pretty similar. Many of the elements of the trial process are very similar as well. One of the, principal differences that has been apparent from the reporting of this trial is the issue of anonymity. In this jurisdiction, in Ireland, there are general restrictions on the publication of any material that can lead to the identification, firstly, of the complainant, but also of the defendant, unless the defendant is convicted. And the reason for that is very simple. It's because there is a realization by the Oireachtas that a rape allegation on its own can have a considerable impact upon the defendant, and if he is then subsequently acquitted, well, his name and his reputation has been spread all over the countryside in the newspapers and the media. So it's an attempt. We attempt to balance, if you like, the impact that the rape trial itself can have.
Mm. In terms of anonymity then, the principle around that and why that's important, I mean, why do we feel in this country, in the Republic of Ireland, that system works better than what we've seen play out over the last number of weeks?
The Northern Irish trial, in fact, is a very good example. These four men, their names have been splashed over the headlines for the last 2 months. A great deal of information has been made public about them, about their behavior, about their lives. But the jury has determined that the prosecution failed to establish their guilt of rape beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm. But the memory of the charge will live on well beyond that. And everybody now knows who they are, knows exactly who and what they were charged with, knows exactly the evidence that was presented. And as I say, that will continue long after this trial.
Can I just ask about the issue of reporting restrictions? Because that is something that a lot of people have been asking about. They're asking about why this hasn't been reported or why there hasn't been commentary on what exactly has been happening when the jury hasn't been present, Conor. So, I mean, could you just explain why that is important for our listeners?
Well, what they're trying to do, what these restrictions try to do, is to ensure that the jury will look at the evidence that's presented to them in court and nothing else. That they won't be influenced or sidetracked by any commentary that they read in the newspapers or they see on the television or they hear on the radio. So their focus should be on the evidence in trial. Again, it's trying to balance the need for justice to be done in public, but also the need for justice to be impartial and based on evidence.
Okay, Conor Hanley, law lecturer at NUI Galway. Thank you very much indeed for taking our call on Lunchtime Live here on News Talk this afternoon. I want to bring you a statement. It's just in from the IRFU and Ulster Rugby. I read, the IRFU and Ulster Rugby note the verdict handed down today at the Belfast Crown Court in relation to the case brought against Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding. We wish to acknowledge, the IRFU says, that this has been undoubtedly a difficult and extremely traumatic time for all involved. The IRFU statement continues to respect the judicial proceedings. The IRFU and Ulster Rugby postponed any internal review of the matter with the players until the proceedings concluded. The IRFU and Ulster Rugby officials, the statement says, will review the matter in line with existing procedures for all contracted players. A review committee made up of senior representatives of the IRFU and Ulster Rugby has been appointed. It will conclude its review as soon as is practicable. This statement concludes then, the players will continue to be relieved of all duties while the review committee is in process and determining its findings. That statement in just in the past few minutes from the IRFU and from Ulster Rugby. More people have been giving their reaction outside Belfast Crown Court. Brendan Kelly, QC for Paddy Jackson, has been speaking to reporters.
We're just to sit on behalf of our client, Patrick Jackson. We're grateful to the jury for reaching what was a common sense verdict of not guilty on all counts. Paddy has been consistent in his denials and in his account.
Brendan Kelly there representing Paddy Jackson. The audio a little bit unclear there, but he said that it was a common sense verdict and he's always stood by Paddy Jackson in that regard. Joe McVeigh is solicitor for Paddy Jackson as well. He's also been speaking to the gathered media.
As for Paddy, his main priority now is to return to work. That means getting back on the rugby pitch and representing his province and his country.
That is Joe McVeigh there, solicitor for Paddy Jackson. Again, if you are just joining us here on Lunchtime Live, 25 to 2 here on the programme, all four defendants in the Belfast rape trial have been found not guilty on all charges. That includes Ulster and Ireland rugby player Paddy Jackson, acquitted of rape and sexual assault. Stuart Olding, acquitted of rape. Blaine McElroy, found not guilty of exposure. And Rory Harrison, found not guilty of perverting the course of justice and not guilty for withholding information.
Thanks again for listening to this Lunchtime Live podcast. Please do subscribe via the app or on iTunes and check us out on newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Talk to you again soon.